You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking Atlanta Braves with MLB.com's Braves beat reporter, Mark Bowman. Mark, you kind of knew coming up on this stretch of schedule that it would tell a lot about the Braves, and they're still fairly early in a fairly tough stretch, but I think it's fair to say it's been pretty sobering. How does this little slide here recently change the way, because we've talked a good bit about how they approach the deadline, buy or seller, probably not conventionally either one, but as they've fallen a little further out and the odds look a little longer, how does it change the way they view the next month?
I think what it does is probably prevents them from being conflicted as we approach the trade deadline. As you said, this has been a very tough stretch with the UFA. They've played within a 9-game stretch. They faced the Nationals, the Pirates, and right before that, they were very fortunate that their pitching proved to be strong enough against the Mets' three starters when they threw Harvey, Syndergaard, and DeGrom at them there in that series. They ended up sweeping that, and at that point in time, they're 500. People say, oh, you know, maybe. Well, if nothing else, this stretch has probably confirmed that this is, you know, a 500 team at best, a team that has improved from an organizational standpoint significantly when you look at their pipeline. And I think if they would have stayed 500, stayed in contention there, you know, they might have been conflicted with, you know, okay, do we give up a piece here or there just to make a run at things, you know, in July. So I think that maybe, you know, this might have been a blessing in disguise, if nothing else.
Last week you mentioned, not that they would be shopping them, but you mentioned both Cameron Maben and Julio Teheran and maybe even Jose Peraza as potential trade pieces. How do they view guys like that as they approach the deadline? And in the case particularly of Teheran and Maben, are those guys, if they were to move, maybe more off-season pieces than July pieces?
Yeah, I think that those are pieces that you're open to moving in July, but at the same time, you take a step back and realize that you're probably going to get much more value for them. Or maybe there will be much more access to the kind of player that you're looking for them, because these are not players you're just moving to move. I mean, it's not like you're moving contracts. You're not, you know, Teheran has certainly struggled. While Maben's value has risen this year, Teheran has decreased. But the reason you're going to be moving these guys is you need a power bat in this lineup. They do not have a power bat coming anytime soon at the minor league level. We've talked about Braxton Davidson being the next in line, and he's at low A right now. So he's a few years away. They need to go get a power bat to put in this lineup, not only to you know, just to provide some home run potential, but to provide some protection for Freddie Freeman when he is over the next few years. That maximizes his value. So I do expect that if they're going to move one of those guys, the best option to find what you're looking for in exchange would come during the off season.
Has the view on Teheran tilted at all? We spent a lot of this year talking about how puzzling he was, how sometimes he's good and sometimes he's bad. And I think the sort of broad descriptor that we've used talking about Teheran this year is just puzzling, confusing what's going on. Is that starting to tilt to maybe there's just really is just something wrong here?
Yeah, you know, it is very confusing to look at all his splits, the home road splits, and I haven't put a lot of bearing on those. This week I touched on it in a story I wrote, just because I was thinking it might have just been coincidence, but you know, you've got the home road splits, you've got, you know, two mediocre starts to compare, and then all of a sudden there's a pretty good one. I think at the end of the day, what we need to remember is this. The only thing we can deduce from what Teheran has done this year is he's not going to be an ace. He is, and I think there's a lot of people that would have told you that before the season. He is a legitimate number two. Maybe he's more like a number three, number four, which, you know, that he still has some value. What I think, why has this happened? You know, early in his minor league career, when he was touted as one of the top pitching prospects, he'd throw 94, 95. That arm strength has gone away. He seems to I've talked to some former pitchers, and there's been a few that hang around here, that have said they just think he's lost his identity when he started relying so heavily on the two-seam fastball. He started shying away from the four-seamer. The two-seamer has not been anywhere near as effective this year, especially when you look at what left-handers have done against him. That pitch has run over the middle of the plate. You know, here's a kid who, he's still just 24 years old. Can he be an effective pitcher at the big league level for many years to come? Yes. You just, from a Braves perspective, when they're looking to deal him, they have to ask the question is, where is his value going to go? Right now, you feel like you would be selling low on him, but, you know, as I mentioned recently, you just have to wonder if that value is ever going to come up because, you know, recent history here in Atlanta, we saw what happened with Jair Jurgens and Tommy Hansen. I'm not saying that Teron is on that same exact path, but you do have to, evaluate the possibility that his value could drop significantly just like theirs did and not come back.
On the flip side, there's a lot of encouragement here lately about Alex Wood, and he's such an interesting guy to me because he's done nothing but succeed at the big league level, and yet I think for a long time there was still this, yeah, but, yeah, how long does he keep doing it? Yeah, is he really a frontline starter for the long term? And it seems like just hearing people talk about him, just reading what you and other people write about him, again, this is a guy where it seems like maybe the narrative is changing a little bit. Maybe there is a little more belief that, hey, maybe this really is what Alex Wood is going to be. Is that a kind of accurate way to describe what he's doing this year?
I think the doubts about his potential as a starter certainly have, evaporated. I think people are starting to buy into it. You know, when he first started, made an impression of spring training, you asked the scouts. This is his very first spring training, and they said, oh, that delivery, I don't know. He's going to, you know, he may be an injury risk. Okay. Well, look, they're all injury risks. We've seen clean deliveries. We've seen sloppy deliveries. They there's always a risk there. He's gone through 50 starts. And one thing I have got to know about Alex Wood is he is a great competitor. When he went to the University of Georgia, he was not, maybe not the most highly touted guy. His first career start in college, he goes up against Garrett Cole, ends up, Georgia wins that game. And Garrett Cole was going to be drafted number one overall a few months later. He's a guy who, he doesn't necessarily pitch with a chip on his shoulder, but at the same time, he likes to prove his doubters wrong. He worked on his mechanics, in front of a mirror for between his sophomore and junior season there at Georgia. When he explains it, how he used a towel and just went through everything because, look, he understands his delivery is awkward, but what he wanted to do was say, hey, look, if I get to the same exact point, doesn't matter how I get there, but if I get to that point where my release point is lined up, where my leg is where a traditional delivery would be, my arm's going to be, he worked on that for hours and days, weeks, whatever, during that year and made himself a better pitcher. I think here's a guy who definitely has the potential. Right now I'd say he's a solid number three, has the potential to be a very effective number two for many years to come. You hear just because of the delivery, and I don't want to put him in this category, but that deceptive delivery of Chris Sale, that adds to some of his success. So, like I said, I'm not putting him in Chris Sale's category, but that does has helped him, the deception within his delivery.
And that's one of the things we learn more and more about is that velocity certainly matters, but when you start picking up that velocity also matters a lot. There's still, as of now, some question about the back of that Braves rotation. As of now, it's really only a four-man rotation. One of them is a guy who's made, I think, two big league starts. I wonder what do they do at the back of the rotation now, and is it too soon to be thinking about Mike Foltynewicz again there?
Well, my thought on Mike Foltynewicz is that they have to get him up there, back up here at some point this season to get him in their eyes. Now, right now you've got a rotation of that has two rookies in it. We're with Manny Banuelos making his major league debut. there on Thursday against the Nationals. Matt Whistler just made his major league debut 2 weeks ago. So two guys that they're going to find out who they are. Mike Foltynewicz, just like he did that 1 month before he was sent down. There were not any plans to send Foltynewicz down. The Braves were going to allow him to take his lumps, but at the same time, basically his demotion to Gwinnett was as much for insubordination as anything, because he walked off the field during that side session at Fenway Park, and the Braves just kind of felt like, and even that wasn't the last straw. It's just when they started talking to him, they're looking in his eyes, and they're just not seeing that fire. So they had to use one of their weapons, which was obviously send the kid down. And he had some things to work on. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. He had some things to work on. But I think they would have allowed him to continue to work on those things at the big league level, knowing that there would be some inconsistency. But at some point this year, I do think that they have to get him back up here. Where he fits in the rotation probably depends on how not only Whistler will perform. You got Banuelos, who will make a few starts and then probably go to the bullpen because he's on an innings limit. It will be influenced on how Williams Perez comes back from his foot injury. But at the same time, I think if you're looking long-term future, who you want to look at down the stretch, obviously I think that though Williams Perez has been very successful, I think that they'll probably tend to try to give Foltynewicz every chance he can if there is an opening, or if Perez gives them a reason to remove him from the rotation there after the break.
All right, good stuff. Mark Bowman, thanks for taking some time to talk here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks everybody for listening.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.